You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
Well, I say aloha to you friends this morning. It is good to see you back again, but I am going to confess to all of you that I think I'd probably still like to be sitting on the beach in Kauai instead of being back in Los Angeles today. We could move WUMC there, right? Would you agree with me on that? Well, there certainly was a good amount of nostalgia for Linda and for me because we were last in Kauai for our honeymoon almost 36 years ago. And to make it even more interesting, we stayed at what is now the current iteration of the hotel which housed us during that September quite a while back. Things have certainly changed in 36 years. They've grown up, partly because of the devastating hurricanes that some of us might remember hit Kauai in the ensuing decades. Well, the hotel is now a much bigger place with many more amenities. It grew up, so to speak. And of course, when something grows, there are always more challenges. And this was no longer an intimate operation there on Kauai. It was big time. And I'm sure that comes with a whole host of issues for those who operate such facilities. But the nice thing about being a guest, unlike being at home, is that you don't have to worry about it. You don't deal with the problems. You just go and enjoy the vacation. Growing pains. It's a term I hope is familiar to us, I suspect is. Families deal with growing pains. Businesses deal with growing pains and they're challenged by them. Even churches deal with growing pains. But when I say this term growing pains, what comes to your mind? Do you remember actually having physical growing pains? That's something that can often happen during adolescence. Or do you remember growing pains that were associated with trying so desperately to fit in? Were growing pains the challenging relationship that you had with your parents during your teenage years? I suspect that we're probably all going to agree that adolescence, well, it's a most interesting time, right? For some, it was the best time of their lives, as they like to say, and all their ensuing years are lived looking back at those days. But if you're like me, I'm happy to be past adolescence, and while there were many fine times, once was enough. And I have no desire to live through that period again. Anybody in agreement with me on that? Well, this week is part two of our sanctuary series that's been entitled Growing Pains. And it's an opportunity for us to look at the two letters that Paul wrote to the church at ancient Corinth. Now, the city of Corinth goes far, far back in antiquity. In fact, archaeologists say that there were inhabitants in this part of the world way back in the Neolithic area, 6500 BCE. And over time, as is often the case in ancient history, cities rose and cities fell, and that certainly was the case for Corinth. Finally, when the Roman Empire came onto scene, there was war that erupted, and the city of Corinth for a time was actually abandoned. It was during the reign then of Julius Caesar that this city of Corinth was rebuilt, and it became a major place. And it was that city, the city that Rome had rebuilt, that Paul experienced. It was, again, a major city, and it was inhabited by a mixed population of people. And that's really important to consider. There were Greeks who lived in Corinth, obviously. There were Romans, and there were also Jews. So it's no surprise that Paul made his way to Corinth, to that particular city at that point in time. And it was in Corinth that Paul met Priscilla and Aquila. We might remember those names from the texts. And the three of them worked together with others as tent makers. And the important thing to note is that he also attended synagogue along with Priscilla and Aquila during this time in Corinth. And that time, the Acts of the Apostles tell us, was approximately 18 months. We also know that during that time, he became very frustrated preaching in the synagogues, and this was one of the places that firmed up his decision that his ministry was going to be to the Gentile population. And the church was established in Corinth, and eventually Paul left the city, in fact, going to the great ancient city of Ephesus. And it was during the time, the 3 years that he lived in Ephesus, that the first correspondence to the church in Corinth was written. Now, the Corinthian church was having growing pains. And these pains were starting to manifest themselves in ways that were destructive to the faith community. Imagine that, bad behavior in the church. Well, there was division that was taking place among them. Some of the challenges they faced is that paganism was still really alive and well, and the roots of paganism were sometimes creeping into this faith community, and it was a situation that created problems for this young church. We're also told in this letter that immorality was a problem among the Corinthian congregation. And we also find out that worship was becoming a challenge for these new Christians, with some who were very intent upon making themselves the center of attention during worship, as opposed to coming together to praise God. Now, we're not talking about minor things here when we cite these. In fact, it was so bad that a person like Apollos, who we read about in Acts of Apostles, wrote to Paul while he was in Ephesus, telling him of his great concern of what was going on in the Corinthian church. And Paul, we assume, was very saddened by the developments. And that's why we have these two letters of instruction, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. We're also, biblical scholars believe there was possibly a third letter too, but that has disappeared. Now, Paul was very specific in this text, especially what we're looking at today, about the way people were using what we call spiritual gifts that had become manifest in this congregation. Now, as United Methodists, we have some problems with these spiritual gifts. They're really not a part of our tradition, and much of Protestantism looks back at these texts scratching their head, because in modern times, this really is not our experience, but for certain segments of the Christian community, they still feel these spiritual gifts are alive and well. And he taught the Corinthian community that these gifts included things like utterances of wisdom, where a person could come forward with these statements that just struck to the core, words of knowledge, insight that persons would have about things or about people. There was the gift of faith. There was the gift of healing. We remember that healing had been an important part of Jesus' ministry, an important task that was passed on to the disciples, and a task that was passed on to the early adherents to Christianity. There was also the gift, we're told, of working miracles, the gift of prophecy, and then the gift that some of us think about when we think of Pentecostalism, speaking in tongues and discerning of spirits, as well as the need for someone to be able to interpret the tongues, what was going on. So it was challenging, to say the least, for that congregation. Now, from what we can tell, the Corinthians were wearing these gifts as badges of honor and of status. And we have to assume there was a lot of arguing that was going on among the church in Corinth. I like to imagine it was something along this line: well, I have the gift of prophecy, but I have the gift of tongues as well as the gift of words of knowledge. Well, who cares about your prophetic utterances if you can call those ridiculous statements you make prophetic? Or perhaps, I can heal people, try topping that. Or perhaps, well, I have both words of wisdom and of knowledge. Given the choices you make, those gifts don't seem to be working very well, do they? I'm sorry, but Paul told me that it was the gift of faith that was more important than anything else. What are you talking about? He clearly said it was the gift of healing. Can't you imagine those kinds of conversation taking place? Now, folks, I want to remind us, this is the first century, early Christianity that we're talking about. And I have to chuckle sometimes when I hear people say, if the church could only be like it was in the first century, everything would be great. Well, wouldn't that be a lot like having to live through adolescence all over again? Once certainly was enough. Now, Paul, of course, as we sense from this letter, had a solution for the people. He stated it most eloquently in this text that we heard from the 13th chapter this morning. Now, while it might burst a few bubbles, this passage was not advice for couples getting married. You see, this passage was intended to be a corrective for things that were going so terribly wrong in the Corinthian church. And Paul's solution was to focus on the subject of love in his communication to the Corinthians. He tried to impress upon these new believers that all of these spiritual gifts, all of the gifts in the world, did not matter whatsoever if they couldn't show any basic love for one another. And he equated them, as we know, to the noisy gongs and to clashing cymbals. And I'm really sorry to any of you out there who are percussionists. But that's what Paul chose to use. They were nothing but noise. That's basically what he was saying. And what he was really doing was expanding, when you think about it, on Jesus' simple interpretation of the commandments. To love neighbor as self. That basic. If they were going to be the church, if they were ever going to have any possibility of being the beloved community, they needed to remember, to embrace, to realize how important it was to be in close relationship with one another, and that love was to be the foundation of that relationship. Now, Paul wasn't just talking about any kind of love. For him, as he defined it, love was kind, it was patient, it was not boastful or arrogant or envious. And he had a particular word that he chose to use for love, the word in the Greek, agape. And when we think of this term agape, we like to think of it as unconditional love, the kind of love that we believe God has for each of us. There are no conditions whatsoever to that love. And when we think about it, that's something that's very difficult to practice for our human family. You see, it was Paul's hope and his dream that the Corinthians would aspire to agape as their way of life. It seems so simple. Yet this kind of love, this agape, is so difficult to realize both in the church as well as the larger community around us. It seems like agape is in short supply when we take a hard look at what is happening in the world around us. Regardless of one's religious persuasion, community only works when compassion and love are held as the high ideals. Take our primary season in which we find ourselves right now. It seems so troubling, I believe, because compassion and love don't appear to even be in the vocabulary of far too many candidates. What is even scarier is the large numbers of people who see no problem whatsoever with the racism and the bigotry and the sexism, as well as the idolatry, that not only goes unchallenged in this dialogue, but it is embraced. Walls, isolation, institutionalized discrimination are just a few of the things that make up this dialogue. And what becomes even more difficult to rationalize is candidates invoking their deep Christian faith while holding tight to attitudes that are incongruous with Jesus' teaching on love and Paul's teaching on love. I don't know about you, but I'm ready for the rhetoric of this primary season to be over. But friends, the church is not immune to this. In 2 weeks, our United Methodist Church will convene for the once every 4-year meeting of the General Conference. Delegations from around the world will participate. What will once again be revealed is that, sadly, we are a divided church. We are divided because there still are many who do not embrace a vision for an open church that is inclusive, that invites all persons to fully participate and lead in this beloved community. You see, friends, there are those who do not believe in what we represent here at Westwood, in our quest to be a place where all are welcome, a place where the full ministries of the church are available to all people. They instead would create legislation that continues to divide rather than build up the beloved community. The vitriol can be every bit as stinging as the general conference as what we hear in our primary process. Friends, the General Conference and the delegates surely need our prayers in the weeks to come. Well, when we take all of this into account, some might think, why bother? Paul could certainly have thought the same way. Why bother with this Corinthian community? I'm just going to turn my attention to something else. But instead, he offered to the Corinthians the word of grace, which showed them, as he said, the more excellent way, the way of love. We are here, friends, I believe, because we have been touched by that more excellent way. We've been touched by agape love that can be represented in the beloved community when it operates at its best. We're here because we know we are nothing on our own, but it is in community that we find our strength and we find our hope. So the challenge for us, friends, anytime we leave this place, is to make sense of how agape fits into our lives. Are we going to go out into the world continuing to be noisy gongs and clanging cymbals? Or will we follow the more excellent way, being agents of the love that God has given for us? What will our choice be? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.